vacation. We don't need no thought control.
Welcome to Education Nation, where every Saturday morning at 10:30, we grab our second cup of coffee and tackle the biggest issues in American education. Your host is the headmaster of Liberty Classical Academy, Rebecca Hagstrom, along with co-host Mark Durkin. School is now in session.
Thank you for joining us here on Education Nation. I am your host, Rebecca Hagstrom, and it's always such a privilege to join you on Saturday mornings discussing some of the most pertinent educational topics that we have. And I'm sad to say that my co-host, Mark Durkin, is out sick today, and so he is not joining us. But we do have, once again, an information-packed interview again this morning that you won't want to miss. Last week, we began a discussion with Joy Pullman. She's a research fellow on education policy for the Heartland Institute, and her experience also includes school teacher, and expertise includes funding, research, and reporting on Common Core. Pullman currently serves as the managing editor and author at The Federalist, in which she's written many articles on Common Core, most recently highlighting new Education Secretary Betsy DeVos. And just this week, she wrote another article on how President Trump can repeal Common Core. And we're going to be discussing that article in detail a little later in the program. But first, welcome back to Education Nation, Joy Pullman.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Yeah, we're so glad to have you back again. And I think that our listeners are enjoying being able to benefit from the expertise that you've gained over the course of several years here as you've been researching Common Core, I think since 2012, you mentioned, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So before we get discussing how President Trump can repeal Common Core, I'd like to revisit a discussion that you and I were having at the end of last week's show. And we were specifically discussing homeschooling and the proposed legislation, the U.S. House Bill H.R. 610. And it's calling for the distribution of all federal education dollars to the states, which, of course, sounds good for elementary and secondary education, in the form of federal grants so that the states can then give the money as vouchers to public, private, and homeschooled students. So when you first hear about this proposed legislation, it appears to be pretty well-intentioned. But Joy, can you explain for our listeners who may have missed last week why this piece of legislation could actually be ill-advised?
Sure. Like you said, I think there are some really good things about the bill, and it is well-intentioned, but the structure of it as written has in some big danger marks, some question marks over it. So the Homeschool Legal Defense Association in particular has raised concerns about the part that applies to homeschoolers, but some of the homeschooling concerns apply to private schools as well. Mm-hmm. So let's just, what the bill basically does is it says, the good idea I think it has is to send states back their own tax dollars from their own citizens, right, as block grants, which is a measure that I support. But what it seems to do, and I've read the language and looked for analysis, but the bill seems to lay itself open for basically, in order to get that federal money, states would have to essentially distribute it equally over all the school-age kids in their state. Mm. So again, that sounds like a good idea, but as a function of having to do that, HSLDA noted that, for one, this would kind of expand government data collection and tracking of homeschool families by, of course, requiring, the bill requires local school districts to kind of tally up how many homeschool kids are within their borders in order to report, you know, that to the federal government and to distribute them those federal dollars. So this is an expansion of the federal government and intimate monitoring and tracking of families. There's another portion of the bill that also, requires that the federal funds not exceed the amount of money that the family, you know, is spending to educate their child, both homeschooled and in private schools, which again invites federal regulations to basically tell private schools, private individuals, how much they should be spending on education,
right,
and taking that decision away from the family or the school or the individual and, you know, giving it to federal bureaucrats.
Right. So obviously these are real points of concern. You know, as I run a private school here in the Twin Cities, as I've mentioned to you earlier, And the last thing I would want is for the federal government, or even the state government for that matter, to come in and tell us how we need to conduct our school day and what topics we need to study and what standards we need to go by. And, you know, our kids are performing extremely well on all measures of testing and success. And so the last thing I would want is what I would consider to be government-run schools who are not necessarily demonstrating that same level of excellence coming in and then potentially bringing our program down to a lower level. That would be a big concern.
I'm also concerned about the bill doesn't seem to have a mechanism by which a private school or a family could refuse the money.
Okay.
You know, it just basically says it will be dispersed, which again, you know, if you have money coming to you and you're one of the few that knows, oh, this, you know, includes a lot of monitoring and strings and control,
mm-hmm.
how do you, you know, what do you, you can just not cash the check or whatever, but the regulations that are created for other people are still going to apply to you.
Right. And that's a concern. That's a big concern, because I would have thought that you could choose not to take that money if you didn't want the strings attached. And so that's a piece of the legislation. You kind of wonder, do you think that that was intentional, or do you think that was just something that kind of got overlooked by the people who were writing the bill?
I don't think it was intentional. So I've read some further reporting since HSLDA complained about the bill. One of the bill sponsors, Representative King, I think from Iowa, he seemed kind of blindsided by it. He sounds like someone, he's really just trying to increase the choice that parents have,
Good.
Which, again, something I support. This is just really a kind of an idea that hasn't been, it's new at the federal level. We have a lot of practice with regulations, with laws at the state level about school choice, and so we've learned about, you know, what things to do, what things not to
right.
do through kind of trial and error there, but we haven't really had seen that experience translated up to the federal level, and I think that's really showing in this piece of legislation.
Okay. Well, that's comforting, actually, to know that they might get to changing that language to protect the private schools and the homeschoolers from federal or state regulation. Another point that was indicated with the H.R. 610 that was actually good is, well, in addition to the other pieces that we already mentioned, is that it repeals in its entirety the Elementary and Secondary Education Act of 1965.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a question. I don't know if you know the answer, Joy, but does this mean then that the ESSA is repealed by default, since that's the updated
yes.
version? So the whole thing
so
would be gone.
So you're basically asking about the successor to No Child Left Behind, which
right.
is known as the Every Student Succeeds Act. Both
right.
of those are just basically modern names for that original 1965 bill that essentially created the federal role in K-12 education.
Right.
So it would, you know, it would repeal all of them. And yes, I would count that a huge major, you know, a huge victory. And it's a great thing that Representative King put that in his bill.
Yeah, that is absolutely fantastic, because then that even takes away some of the concern that goes with the regulations. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So if there's no federal regulations to begin with and money just gets dispersed to the states, then
mm-hmm.
you really are just looking at potentially state regulations, which,
right.
while that's...
And I support, you know, again, taking federal regulations and letting states choose, because, you know, mm-hmm. at the local level, I can go, I just went, you know, to a local town hall meeting from a couple of my local state representatives. I can get to them way easier than I can from
right.
my federal representative.
Right. Well, and as we may have discussed last week, that's one of the problems with Common Core, is that it's a copyrighted set of
mm-hmm.
standards that were written by a bunch of bureaucrats that you can't get to. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, no longer can
or
you go.
Or if you've got to them, you know, you have no lever, you know, I can't vote them out of office,
right.
you know.
Right, right. It is as far from local control as you can possibly get. Oh my goodness, that is absolutely for sure. I know too that we might have some homeschool people listening to this program who may want to get involved with this to the degree that they can. And one of the things that we did want to do before we close out, because we're gonna end this segment here pretty soon, Joy, and then we're gonna come back and
mm-hmm.
talk more about your current articles. But I want to let homeschoolers know that you can call the Capitol Switchboard and contact the sponsors of this bill, H.R. 610, the House Representatives King King, Harris, and Olson, and let them know that you're a homeschooling parent. And actually, we as private school educators should be doing the same thing, to let them know that we want to make sure that if this goes through, that they change some of this language so that it isn't required that homeschoolers and private schools would receive these vouchers if they didn't want the regulations. And also, I know from the standpoint of the homeschoolers, there's concern that they don't want to be even given a right at the federal or state level for homeschooling because they don't feel they need that right. That already exists. And so they don't want the government saying, well, you have this right, because then they can say later, you can take that right away. Right.
Right. Well, America is not a totalitarian system. So what that means, among many other things, is that if there's no law saying you can't, well, then you're free to do it. So if there's no law saying you can't homeschool, then you're free to do that.
Right.
As soon as the law starts defining how and when and where and why, then, you know, that kind of creates one of those slippery slopes, you know, that tends to lead towards increasing control.
Absolutely. And that is definitely a concern. So again, if you are listening and you want to get your voice heard on this issue, it is H.R. 610. Contact King, Harris, and Olson, and let them know that while you may like this language, or you might like this bill, that you would like to see it change so that there is an exception for those who don't want to receive this. All right, we are going to take a little break here, and we will be back in a few moments to talk to Joy about her latest articles on how to remove Common Core.
We don't need no education.
Well, good morning, and I am Rebecca Hagstrom, your host of Education Nation, and we are here this morning talking to Joy Pullman, who is editor of The Federalist of the Education section. And Joy, we've enjoyed hearing so much of your knowledge on the House bill that we just discussed in the first segment, and we're going to turn our attention to a couple of articles that you wrote fairly recently, one just this last week, entitled, Yes, Donald Trump Can Repeal Common Core. Here's How. I love that title, by the way. And the other article that we're going to talk about today is one entitled, Democrats Are Going Ape on Betsy DeVos Because If They Lose Education, They Lose Everything. I love that title, too. I have been saying this for years, that as a conservative, definitely education has been owned by the liberal progressive side of things for many, many years, many decades now. And so it's interesting that you entitled the article that if they lose education, they lose everything. It is the core, isn't it?
I think so. I mean, and America's founders also thought so. If you study their thought, especially about education, you find that they thought that education was crucial for the particular kind of government we have. If you're going to run most of your own life, you know, in a system of self-government, you have to be well-educated. You have to, you know, learn how to be wise. You have to have good character. You have to have self-control. You know, you need to know a good, you know, deal about history in order to kind of inform your judgments and your decisions, both political and personal. So I agree with the American founders that, you know, to have our precious system of government, we have to have a really good system of education undergirding it. I'm sure you do this too. I look around, you know, not only conservatives, but independents, a lot of Democrats, you know, they look around at society and they see, you know, kids on college campuses punching people in the face, you know, screaming and reporting their professors for, you know, not having politically correct ideas or just suggesting alternative information to kids, so on and so forth. Those kind of stories are fodder for lots and lots of internet articles.
Yes.
And so we don't like, most Americans I know from polling, you know, most of them think that American education is going in the wrong direction, and it has been for a long time.
Right.
And so my argument just is, if you don't like what you see, then you shouldn't keep doing the same thing or supporting the same system. And that's kind of the disconnect that I see. You know, most people are not satisfied. They don't think things are good. But the sort of, you know, lawmakers that we vote into office, the sort of schools that we put our kids in, they're still continuing to do the same types of things, the same ideas, the same curriculum, and that is producing the results that we don't like. So, you know, we all know the old adage that the definition of insanity is doing the same thing and expecting a different result. So I think, you know, that our education system does need, you know, rather dramatic deregulation, more local initiative like your school, you know, people solving their own problems rather than expecting other people to do it for them. So I think American education, to get self-government, we need to give self-government. We need to govern ourselves. We need to run our own schools again.
Mm-hmm. Boy, well said, Joy. I could not agree with you more. And, you know, today I hear so often from people that I have discussions with and conversations with that, well, you know, I turned out fine and I went to, public school, and I did too. I went to public education I went through public education all the way through my master's degree. Mm-hmm. I never attended a private school. And yet, things have changed and deteriorated. And I would actually say that looking back on my own education relative to what I know is now possible, I also did not receive a good education. You know, I think I read a couple of classic books in high school, and that's about it. And I think I wrote one research paper in high school. And so I was not given the opportunity at a broad-based, you know, I never had a class on Western civilization. And as you pointed out, if we don't teach our students and our citizens of this country where we came from as a country and how Western civilization developed and how America developed, then how do we expect them to have the tools that they need to be able to protect the freedom that we enjoy in this country?
Mm-hmm.
I was just going to say, I do think what you pointed out too, what we're seeing at the college level now is a result of kids not having been given that broad base of understanding of where did we come from? How did we get there? That we were a melting pot, that we do have to have conversations that are sometimes difficult so that we can arrive to what we think is the best path forward rather than just screaming each other down.
Well, that's actually just what I was thinking about when, you know, listening to you here. Is that I think a lot of parents, we have shame about our own upbringing. We have shame about, you know, the fact that our kids are already, you know, they've already lived so many years with us, and maybe they're not getting the best or the optimal. So this conversation is a really difficult one to have when it feels like a personal attack, not only on parents, on grandparents, on aunts and uncles, but the many teachers that we know, the administrators, the people who work in our school system. There's so much shame involved where people, you know, it's hard for us to look at, well, maybe I didn't make the optimal decision. Or the other thing is, you know, I think a lot of people, they don't have the opportunity to make a good decision. That's a real problem where it's not necessarily, you know, I think about public school teachers. There are so many wonderful, great public school teachers that it's not their fault that things are not going as well as they could. They're hampered by so many regulations from people who have never been inside a classroom. And so, you know, it feels like a personal attack on them when we talk about the degrading condition of our schools.
Yeah.
But look, we should be talking about the parents who are not doing a good job to support those kids, you know, and they just put them in the classroom, you know, and expect the teacher to be handling all these personal problems.
Yeah.
You know, our government bureaucrats get in there. You know what I mean? So I entirely agree. You know, people don't have to feel ashamed about having had poor opportunities or about not having, you know, maybe made the best. They've only realized later that they could have made a better decision. That's part of growing, right? And also part of maturity, though, is being able to look at the past and learn from it and try to make better steps forward every day.
Exactly. And, you know, one of the things that you touched on that I want to tie us back into your article through is the teachers who we know, the vast majority of them are excellent they're wanting the best for their students. They're wanting their kids to learn. And yet they are encumbered by all of the regulation, and specifically through Common Core. And I've actually talked to teachers and parents in the public school system that are very frustrated with all of the regulations and the testing that comes with Common Core.
Mm-hmm.
So we know that Trump wants to eliminate Common Core, but will Betsy DeVos, will she implement Obama's regulations on ESSA, which actually require states to use testing that aligns with Common Core? Or is there talk of her eliminating Obama's regulations and writing her own?
I think there is room for optimism. So the as she has come into her position, Education Secretary Betsy DeVos's department has put a hold on a couple of the regulations that the Obama administration was putting into place on this new education law as it was leaving office.
So
they so far have not included the testing review, but that actually is underway within her department right now. So she does have a lot of power within existing law, within regulations, to kind of, you know, back off, to let teachers teach, to let, you know, schools function, to let, you know, get largely the problem with the U.S. Department of Education is that it gets in the way of all the good that the people in front of the kids are trying to do.
Right.
So
right.
the and I think that she knows this. I've read some of her public statements, you know, some of her discussions about the issue of education. She knows, you know, government regulations are a problem and that, you know, no bureaucrat is going to care about a child as much as his mom, his dad, and his teacher.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So, I mean, I think there's room for optimism.
Good.
But I still, you know, I don't like to give public servants credit until they've actually done things.
Yeah.
So I'm waiting to see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Well, and I know that another part of the ESSA explicitly states that the secretary can't influence standards. And that's another reason to eliminate the ESSA altogether, or at the very least rewrite the regulations. But we would love to see her assure the states that they don't need to be penalized or they won't be penalized if they don't use the Common Core state standards. So as you mentioned in your article, there are some Bush types flooding into the Education Department under Betsy DeVos, under the Trump administration. Can you briefly, and I want to keep it kind of brief because I want to move on to some other questions.
Mm-hmm.
Can you briefly explain to our listeners why that's a concern?
Well, I think it's become very clear over the primaries where Donald Trump won and, you know, moved through the Republican system into the presidency, that the Republican Party has been having an inter-party war for a very long time and that just split into the open.
Mm-hmm.
And so all of that to say, Jeb Bush was a very good governor of Florida. I understand he did a lot of things that were pioneering in the 1990s.
Mm-hmm.
But I see the way that he ran education as kind of a midpoint, you know, towards what is possible and or ideal.
Mm-hmm.
And so former staffers who worked with him who are joining Betsy DeVos's team, they tend to favor, you know, just outdated ways of thinking about the possibilities and the needs of the education system. They favor what I call managerial progressivism, which is, you know, well, Republicans will run a big, huge government just more efficiently than Democrats.
Goodness.
Well, we won't have so many cost overlays. So I would just like to see a lot more action happening out of the federal and other levels of government right now, because our country is in a really serious situation. I just don't think managing the mess is going to be the right answer anymore.
Boy, do I absolutely agree with you on that. And you're right, that does kind of represent part of the split between the big government Republicans and the limited government Republicans, because we do seem to have both under the same umbrella. One of the other things that you mentioned in both of your articles is that Common Core education is basically ineffective progressive education thought world.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand from before the show that you borrowed that term from Edie Hirsch, which are remarkably adept at producing activist drones for progressive causes. I love that line. I just love that line. So why would Republican leaders like Lamar Alexander, Jeb Bush, and possibly Betsy DeVos, we don't know for sure, why would they support keeping Common Core intact when it's the very core of what's causing them to lose ground in the culture?
I mean, I just think they really don't realize that, how do you say it, that education is not a technical enterprise.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we hear a lot from those types of folks that education is not political, you know, and that sounds really great, but then that basically is like saying that education is not philosophical, that it's not, how do you say, you don't have any first principles that inform what you think a child is and how he should be educated and where, you know, he ought to end up.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just plain false.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so their assumptions about the world, about education, tend towards treating children like an object, like, you know, on something that is assembled impassionately on a factory floor.
Mm-hmm.
When children are, as you know, from working with them in your school, they are human beings, they're individuals, they have very unique and personal situations, you know, and teachers and parents need to be free to meet those child's needs in their own way. You know, they have souls.
Mm-hmm.
They're not just, you know, push button, get output, you know. So the most important component of a child's success in life is, you know, a strong relationship with healthy people. And you can't quantify a strong relationship with healthy people. You can see some of its outcomes. You can see that the child likes to read. You can see that he's not starting fights, you know, during school or on the playground, right? But you can't really say, therefore, we're going to judge schools and teachers, you know, by metrics of whether the children like to read and whether they're starting fights. It just doesn't make any sense.
Right.
You know, their vision for education, I think, is just implicitly progressive, and that's why it feeds progressivism, even though, you know, they just don't seem to have realized that.
Yeah, and you actually even made a comment in your article about the fact that they're almost a victim of their own, they're held captive to their ideological opponents. I loved that line because that's truly what's happening. Well, Joy,
I was just going to say, you know, you have to realize that our Republican lawmakers who are, the conservatism is kind of their second suit of clothes they put on after being educated in the progressive way in their elementary schools, like all of us were.
Right.
So their instincts, you know, are opposite what they are really want to aim for.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay, so we have about 3 minutes left, and I would like you to maybe just list off very quickly three top things that Betsy DeVos could do to eliminate Common Core, and then I want to give you some time to plug your book at the end.
Right. So number one, I would say what you said earlier, she should tell states that if they switch tests, if they switch standards, her department will not penalize them in any way for moving away from Common Core.
Okay.
And she can do that right away with the testing review that's underway right now.
Okay.
Second item, there's in Congress, there's coming up a bill called the Higher Education Act, and there's a title in it called Title II, wherein the federal government essentially monitors how states train their teachers and tells them what to do. The federal government should not have anything to do, you know, with how teachers are trained, because we simply don't have the research to inform how we do that. We, you know, the research is not good enough for the feds to be making states do anything at all. So therefore, they should stop doing things and get out of states' way.
Absolutely.
And the third thing I think she can do is, you know, with the regulations, the grants that she gives, you know, the Department of Education, reroute them from progressive organizations, cut off all funds and influence to the institutions that created Common Core, and reroute that while it still exists into, you know, better organizations that are not Common Core captured.
That's excellent. That's an excellent one. I know the Gates Foundation has spent, I think, literally billions of dollars on Common Core. So that would be a good one to cut out. So that being said, I would like to allow you to talk about your book. You've written a book called Education Invasion, How Common Core Fights Parents for Control of American Kids. Briefly tell us where we can find this book. It sounds excellent. I'm going to buy myself a copy.
You can go right now to Amazon and pre-order it. It's called Education Invasion. If you just type that in the search bar, it will come up. It's out March 14th. You can also, I think, pre-order at Barnes & Noble. I know you can get it there once it's out. For certain, you can pre-order on Amazon, and that's good because it helps boost the book's visibility once it really does go on sale.
Okay.
And so what it's about is I try to distill, you know, the 5 years of heavy-duty work no other reporter in the country has done as much as I have in depth on Common Core. And
awesome.
I say that not to make myself, you know, sound like this really great person, but just so you know that, you know, I'm the right place to come
if you
want to know about this topic.
Absolutely.
And so I try to write it in a really engaging magazine style, so I tell stories about people to kind of help, you know, get you through the facts and the data and all the figures that can get really mind-numbing, so
it's
to really illustrate what's going on and its effects on kids.
Good, good. It's going to be excellent, and I can vouch for the fact that you are very knowledgeable on this topic, and I would encourage our listeners to pick up the book Education Invasion by Joy Pullman. And then I want to also announce that we've got an Education in Society event coming up on Tuesday, February 28th, 7 p.m. We have Annette Meeks coming to speak with us about how education has changed over the years. It didn't always look this way. Join us at Liberty Classical Academy, February 28th, 7 p.m.
No education.